Hello, Patreon listeners. I'm Fry.
And I'm Bree, ranking all of the antipopes from Hippolytus to Felix V. And this is our third antipope, Felix II.
Yeah.
He's the third antipope to get an episode because, like we mentioned before, there was that brief appearance with that figure called Heraclius that sometimes get called antipope number three, but we have like 5 lines of information on him, and he's more like a lapsi person, so not a very popey man, so.
Yeah, it would be more like the whole episode we would just rate him poorly.
Yeah, because you really didn't like him at all. So Felix II gets to be number 3.
All right.
So, right off the bat, 2 things. One, if you're listening to this and I sound weird, I'm sick, I'm sorry, we're going ahead with it anyways. And number 2, this man has significantly less available on him, so this isn't going to be like a super long episode like we had with Hippolytus and Novation, and this is something we're going to have to contend with kind of on and off as our antipopes go on, because not every single one makes a massive impact on the church in the way that led to like smear campaigns and all of that horrible stuff that went on with Hippolytus and then with Novation. But there is going to be more of that in the future, so it's going to be like swings and roundabouts when it comes to the antipopes. Sometimes really long, sometimes really short. So there's that. But Felix does have one thing that sets him apart from Hippolytus and Novation in a way that he might want to brag about.
What is that?
He's in the Liber Pontificalis.
Oh, what?
Yeah, he actually gets an official entry in the Book of the Popes. He is already way more legit. And this makes sense when we look about how he actually became antipope, as we talked about in Liberius's episode, but we'll get into it as we go, of course. The other thing that we will need to contend with is the fact that, just like when we covered Pope Felix in episode 28, this Felix also gets confused with the same previous Roman martyr Felix. And this becomes a pretty substantial problem in this case. Like, with the Pope, we were able to kind of separate it out very easily, but with the antipope, it becomes a problem in terms of, like, jumbled sources and misinformation, so much so that we occasionally see this antipope Felix called a saint and show up in martyrology with the feast day of July 29th, but that's not actually him. So, the unintended consequence of this jumble, though, is that, again, he's often seen as way more legitimate than he actually is, and so he appeared on pope lists for so long that future Pope Felixes will have the wrong numbers associated with them. He is the only Pope Felix II that we will ever have, because the antipope was credited for so long that our next official Pope Felixes will be Felix III and Felix IV. And our next antipope Felix will call himself Felix V. So we only actually get 2 antipope Felixes. And it could be argued, too, that he was seen as legitimate because he was appointed by the emperor rather than causing a schism and declaring himself to be pope, and therefore it was legal and valid. But we have to remember, he was still never actually elected or consecrated to the position by the bishops, so he is still officially an antipope. If there is any doubt, we are putting it to rest. This man is an antipope.
Yeah, but it's not like, yeah, he didn't like go out of his way to be the antipope. He was just sort of shoved into this position.
He sure was. And I feel so badly for him for it. So first off, let's get into his early life. Felix was born in Rome, and his father's name was Anastasius.
It's me, Anastasius.
Remember that name. But see, it helps to have some Liber Pontificalis to get us started on the right foot, because that's more information than we normally get. So he enters the church at some point, and by the time of Liberius's papacy, Felix is serving as an archdeacon. And then, in 355, Emperor Constantius II insisted that the Pope absolutely needed to, no, must, sign the decrees issued by the Council of Milan, which condemned Athanasius of some sort of political crime thought up by Constantius as a justification to depose and exile him once more. We are smack dab in the middle of the Arian controversies and the forever exiles of Athanasius at this point. And
it was just because he didn't like Athanasius.
100%.
The political crime was annoying me.
So yeah, just pretty much exactly that. It doesn't matter what the crime is. I said he did it, sign the papers, get it done with. And you will hear so much more about this because parallel to this episode, it is the actual episodes where this is happening, 37 and 38, so you're good to go. And this was the moment that Ammianus, which is our source, told us that Constantius, quote, strove with burning desire to have his condemnation confirmed by the higher authority of the Eternal City. And where Athanasius tells us, quote, when they perceived that he was an orthodox man and hated the Arian heresy, and earnestly endeavored to persuade all persons to renounce and withdraw from it, these impious men reasoned thus with themselves, if we can persuade Liberius, we shall soon prevail over all. So that's right about that time where Eusebius the eunuch shows up to bribe and then threaten Liberius into submission. And Liberius refuses to sign the condemnation flat out. And Constantius is enraged and sends the prefect of Rome, Leontius, to capture Liberius and bring him before the emperor. And that's where we have the emperor offering Liberius 3 days to change his mind about complying, or he was going to exile. And Liberius refused and made it clear that he didn't need 3 days, his mind was not changing, and he gets immediately exiled to Berowea. And Constantius turns his attention back to Rome, which is now conspicuously absent a pope and falling apart as a result. So he turns to Felix, who is still serving as an archdeacon, and tells him, hey, guess what? You're going to be the pope now. I'm not sure that's quite the message you want to receive.
No, absolutely not.
So this is the effective start of his anti-papacy. And for the first time, we actually have an anti-pope who is effectively in control of Rome. Usually these are the people that get chased out and, you know, try to create rival factions in other places. He's actually the one in Rome, controlling Rome with imperial authority behind him. But he's not going to have a good time with it. I mean, yes, he's got all of the civil authority recognizing him and supporting him, and then we have most of the higher-ranking clergy who just kind of accept him for fear of losing their position and being expelled a la Liberius. But not even this is absolute. As we will see, the next highest man in the Roman clergy is an archdeacon called Damasus, who will willingly follow Liberius into exile and then turn around and come right back and go, maybe it's better for me here in Rome. I recognize Felix as pope. So, you know, we're going to talk about that in the next couple weeks, depending on how the schedule goes. But this is absolutely not even close to the case for the Christian Roman laity, because they absolutely 100% and very unapologetically refuse to acknowledge Felix as pope. Absolutely not. They are furious that the pope has been deposed by the emperor, no less, for reasons that have nothing to do with the administration of the church. And now Felix, who, even if he had been a great archdeacon in the past, is going to be seen as nothing but a traitor and a puppet of the empire. Another source suggests that at this point, there might have even been some confusion, and Felix had not been the archdeacon, but maybe only a deacon before the emperor made him pope. So, if this is the case, Felix never would have been properly ordained as a priest, and would have been significantly more lowly before being made pope, and that the people were also railing against this, you know, improper shooting up of ranks. It's possible that this is part of the outrage, but nearly every other source calls him an archdeacon of Liberius, and that would make more sense as to why he was chosen. Him being a deacon rather than an archdeacon and still getting chosen may have made more sense if he was a closet Arian or something, but Zosimus makes sure that we do not think this and gets rid of this speculation in his Ecclesiastical History, Volume 11, saying, quote, it is said that Felix always continued in adherence to the Nicene faith, and that with respect to his conduct in religious matters, he was blameless. The only thing alleged against him was that prior to his ordination, he held communion with the potential Arians. So he's saying, even though this guy is an anti-pope, he's actually totally Orthodox. Socrates Scholasticus, our future children's television show star.
Yes.
I love that. He's the only one that suggests maybe Felix was forced to embrace Arianism before he was selected by the emperor in his Ecclesiastical History of Socrates Scholasticus, which is a great title for a first episode. But this doesn't shed any light on what his actual role was or why that would happen. However, there is also the fact that Damasus is referred to an archdeacon at this point, so why he was chosen over Damasus could have gone either way. So poor Felix struggles to have his authority recognized for the next 2 years and doesn't really accomplish anything. He's intensely resented by all the people who ignore him, and the empire is experiencing its own brand of chaos, so it's not exactly like he can call on the emperor to reinforce him, because the emperor is really, really busy. And it turned out that that wouldn't help him too much, as we'll see, because Constantius does come to Rome about a year and a half into his anti-papacy in May of 357, and he realizes very quickly that this plan of just replacing the pope is not going well at all. Zosimus tells us, quote, "When the emperor returned to Rome, the people loudly demanded Liberius and besought his return." Book 4, chapter 11. Ammianus adds to this, telling us that the most influencing factor on the emperor were the noble women who approached him to demand the return of their pope because, quote, "their husbands had insufficient courage for the venture." The emperor is literally being accosted in the street by the people who vehemently reject his imposed exile on the pope, and they are not coming around to accept the new pope in his place. It's hard not to feel bad for Felix at this point. We have no records to how complicit he was or wasn't with Constantius's plan, but there's no way for him to win here. He is in a very lose-lose situation. And Constantius can't really ignore this public outcry either. Like, he's literally being accosted in the street by women whose husbands aren't brave enough to speak to the emperor, and they're saying, "Bring back the pope, you have made a terrible, terrible mistake." And he's really not happy about it, because Constantius really likes to get his way, and he really, really doesn't like to call people back from exile. But he does eventually agree to allow Liberius to return. And we covered all the different reasons and circumstances under which Liberius could have been returning in his own episode, heresy. So we won't rehash them here. But the important part is that Liberius is coming back. But the emperor isn't so willing to reinstate him in full, especially given how there's now this huge public challenge to his authority as it is. He's like, "I don't want to make the rabble right. I can't let them see that I've made a mistake. Like, I have to find a way to do this that still makes me look like this is my decision." So instead, he plans that Liberius can come back, but that he and our anti-pope Felix must rule together jointly as co-popes. How well do you think that's going to go?
Honestly, that's going to be bad, because poor Felix isn't even really ordained or anything.
Mm-hmm. It's just never going to happen. And there was no way it was ever going to happen. Pope Liberius receives a hero's welcome back in Rome, and the people turn on Felix within a heartbeat. If they ever had any sympathy for him, it goes out the window the minute that Liberius comes back. It was mob rule almost immediately, and Felix was expelled from the church and forced into exile on threats of violence and a mob cry of "One God, one Christ, one bishop, get the hell out." We have a few accounts on how this went down. Zosimus' accounts say, quote, "The people of Rome regarded Liberius as a very excellent man and esteemed him highly on account of the courage he had shown in opposing the emperor. They had even stirred uprisings on his behalf and had gone so far as to shed blood. Felix survived but a short time, and Liberius found himself in sole possession of the church." Quote. He also adds, quote, The event was, no doubt, ordained by God, that the seat of Peter might not be dishonored by the occupancy of two bishops, for such an arrangement is a sign of discord, and is foreign to ecclesiastical law. So, some sources say he was killed. Right here, right then. Chuck him out of the city and kill this man. But this isn't true based on some more other, far more detailed accounts that we have. J.P. Kirsch also suggested that before he was fully expelled, Felix and a small gathering of his actual followers and supporters managed to hide and secure the Santa Maria Basilica in Trastevere, but that they were quickly overtaken and banished officially. So, not dead, but banished. Felix left Rome for Porto. And this source doesn't actually tell us if it's the Porto in Portugal, the Porto Cervo in Sardinia, or the more likely Portus harbor that is an actual ancient part of Rome, the modern-day small village of Porto Fiumicino, which is just outside of Rome. But wherever Porto he ended up in, he remained there, and he never gave up his title of Pope until his death on November 22nd of 365. For the rest of his life, he called himself Pope, even though he was in a banishment spot and nobody wanted him to be Pope.
And he wasn't ever really Pope. I mean...
Yeah. But he didn't want to let go of the title. Maybe that's all he had, you know?
He sounds like a very sad man.
He sounds so sad. However, the Liber Pontificalis tells us another story of his death, which says that, presumably after his exile, Felix turned on Constantius.
That's bad. Don't do that.
It's bad, but you can see why this would happen after all he's been through.
Mm-hmm.
So, in this account, Antipope Felix declares that, for some reason, Constantius too had been baptized twice by Eusebius of Nicomedia, and that therefore he was a heretic who should be excommunicated by the church. Baptism is a sacrament that should only happen once and only once. So, yeah. He just said, oh, actually that the emperor was baptized twice. He's a heretic. Get rid of him. And as you might expect, if this was true, it really irritated Constantius, who came from him and had him and several of his followers beheaded, quote, outside the walls of the city in the town of Cora, beside the aqueduct of Trajan on November 11th. Very specific for an unlikely story.
Mm-hmm.
Additionally, this account adds that his body was laid out, and come nightfall, Damasus and a handful of followers stole his body away and buried him in the basilica on the Via Aurelia. This basilica, by the way, is also credited to him, allegedly built during his anti-papacy in Rome, on a site on the Via Aurelia that he had bought lands for personally while he was still a priest. The church bit, also probably definitely true about him. We know that much. But the martyrdom seems like maybe it was part of confusion with the other martyr Felix, because, you know, the beheading martyrdom seems a little bit earlier in style, and that Felix was said to be buried on the Via Portuensis. So, I mean, it's possible. There's a lot of details, but very unlikely. There's that. He is now dead. He never gave up the title of antipope. Are you ready to rate him?
Think so.
Okay. Not so great yet.
No.
But he has one category that is really his.
All right. Well, we'll get there.
Yeah.
Papam Eustificum.
It's not this category. It is not Papam Eustificum, not the justifications for his schism and setting himself up as antipope, because he did none of that. He was not trying to justify himself.
He was just there.
He was just there. He was put into this position, and Constantius's justification wasn't like, oh, the Pope's a heretic. Oh, the Pope is not doing a good job. He's basically saying the Pope has refused to fall in line and has refused to support my made-up charge of Athanasius, so I'm getting rid of him and installing my own man. None of that is a good reason. Do you want to give Felix any points for that as a reason?
No, I just sort of like riding the wave is not point worthy.
It is definitely not point worthy. So I think this has to be a zero.
Ecclesias impetus.
What actual impact did he have on the church? Did he weaken the church or strengthen them? You know, a little bit of both here. It caused a huge turmoil in Rome. You know, the deposition of Liberius caused a very dangerous environment recorded by Athanasius that we talked about in his episode. You know, he said, pious Christian women had to leave the city, monks were at risk of danger, Christian foreigners who had settled in Rome were suddenly forced out, the borders became strictly guarded to keep Orthodox Christians from coming into the city or from leaving and getting to Liberius. But yet he does kind of bring people together because the people of Rome come together to refuse to accept him, and they harass and accost the emperor because of him, and he was violently expelled. There's some division because he does split the upper clergy from the lower clergy. You know, the uppers accept him and the lowers refuse him. It's not good for unity of the church, but it is really great for unity of the Christian people. I don't know. To me, because it's really middle of the line, it's both good and bad, I gotta give him a 5, because that's middle of the road.
Okay.
What would you like to give him?
I think more like a 3.
Okay. Because he did have an impact, and, you know, necessarily being a good impact isn't great for the way that we score our antipopes, but the division, you know, it works both ways.
Facium scleratus. Show okay. me his face.
So because he was considered a legitimate pope.
For a hot mo.
Yeah, he actually gets one of our official paintings.
Ooh, an official painting.
Yeah, which means we get to raid on this. Remember when I said there was a round that belonged to him?
I assumed it was this one, I just didn't want to say.
Here you go.
Fuck Bri. No.
Thank goodness this is Patreon, because I 100% have to leave that reaction in there.
No.
I have been waiting to show you this picture for so long.
Does he have tiny vampire fangs? What's happening with his mouth?
100%.
This is a vampire you have shown me. Like a Nosferatu.
See, I just keep seeing Bunny Rabbit at the same time. So now it's like a bunny vampire.
A bunnicula, as it were.
Yes, it's a bunnicula.
No, he's got the real close Nosferatu, like, teeth. This is a vampire, and, like, half his nose is missing. This man is undead.
Oh, it's one of my favorite. You know, we just finished recording Siricius the other day, which yes. also has some of the greatest photos. And then I was going to throw this one at you. I'm like, she's going to think at this point that I'm pranking her or doctoring these images. Because it's too, yeah. So,
I mean, I could Google.
Yeah, you could, but don't, because it's great.
So, undead Santa Claus gets a 2 from me.
A 2? Mm-hmm. See, I'm going the other way. I'm giving him a full 10.
Ooh, like, this is, my goodness, no.
This is an image that I will not forget in my time.
It's going to haunt me in the night. When I hear things outside my window, it's going to be him.
Okay, so I didn't know how you were going to score this, but he got a 12 in this category, which gives him a 3 in total, highest scoring image of our antipopes. I'm so glad I got to share that with you.
Oh my god.
And I love how the reaction was just, fuck Bri. Yeah, so that was the thing that happened. Okay.
Who would go up to this man on the street and go, you're Pope now, sir? You look like a popey chap.
Well, gee, thanks.
Is this what Constantius thinks Pope look like, the popes look like in his head? Is this just his headcanon? So he found someone on the street that looks like how they make him feel inside?
Well, maybe. Maybe when he realized he had an official official portrait done of Felix when he was declared Pope. And then when he realized it wasn't going to work out very well, he's like, deface that. Make it horrible.
Make it hideous.
Because, that's what he's done. I love it. So we've gone in completely different directions with our rating, and I love that. This is an entirely subjective show.
Tempus non pontificus.
So technically, he is antipope for 2 years, which is 355 to 357 when he is expelled. But he never gave up the title. So, you know, because of the way that he became antipope and the fact that he doesn't ever really relent, we're actually going to give him until his death. Because usually antipopes are declared by themselves or by their supporters.
And then, you know, so if he's like, I'm still pope over in wherever he's at.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. So we're going to give him until his death. So 355 to 365, which is 10 years. So for 8 years, he sat there going, I'm still pope.
Someone comes in and is like, here's your soup. I'm pope.
Yeah, you didn't say your holiness. So yeah, that gives him a score of 2.5. Pretty decent as far as the anti-papacy goes.
Hey, so it's canon bonus round time. No fanfare.
He is not a saint, although he does kind of get confused with that one, and he occasionally shows up with a feast day within the martyrology because of that, but no, he is not a saint. So just the sainthood is for the Roman martyr Felix. Okay, so his final score for his anti-papacy is a whopping 13.5, which makes him, of course, compared to Hippolytus and Novatian, our lowest scoring anti-pope man.
That's fair.
And so now we need to ask, pope or nope?
Nope.
Not better than Liberius? Not better than Damasus?
No.
Yeah, no. There isn't really a chance for this. You know, there are going to be some antipopes. Actually, I think our next one is really going to be a contender for this category, because I quite like him.
Okay.
So maybe I'll argue for him.
When we get there.
Yep, that's a thing. So that's it. That is the end of Antipope Felix. What a journey that was.
We took that journey together.
We sure did. So, and you took it with us, patrons. So I hope you're enjoying our Antipope episodes and everything else that we're putting out. We still have lots of them to go, shockingly, and not that far off. So next month, you will be getting the full-on biography of Athanasius.
No longer an interlude.
Oh, gosh. Yeah, it was the interlude of interludes. Over an hour and a half, I think we ended up recording that one.
Yeah, so the recording ended up being like an hour and 45 minutes.
Yeah, so hopefully you enjoy this one. Hopefully you enjoy that one. And we will say thank you and goodbye.
Bye.